Louise, before we get into matters European and debt instruments for defence and all of that, the Taoiseach was meeting the British Prime Minister earlier on today. Where did they meet and what did they say?
So this was the first of what we are told is going to be an annual UK-Ireland summit. So the first was held in Liverpool. And I suppose what any time we have heard about the Irish government, British government's meeting recently, it's kind of been in crisis situations, be that to discuss Brexit, be it to discuss the Stormont executive, the fact it wasn't sitting, all these kind of crisis opportunities. And I think today really marked a difference. And you know, I don't think anyone was really expecting anything huge or groundbreaking out of this meeting, but we heard a lot of, you know, nice language for a change about a reset in the relationship, the next chapter of the relationship. And we've turned a page on turbulent times, as Keir Starmer said.
Did I hear something about Guinness diplomacy? Did you catch that phrase as well?
There was probably.
It was mentioned.
It was that kind of a meeting, it would seem. And there was some, you know, a enhanced cooperation scheme. It's called the UK-Ireland 2030 plan, and you know they're going to work together more on things like energy and offshore power, and see how, you know, they can work together as I guess two islands that are next to each other, and probably what they would have wanted to do for the last couple of years. But we have really seen under the last government and the Tory governments and successive Tory governments, it has to be said, a real strain in the relationship. Like I said, initially it was Brexit. Even in the last couple of months, this time last year, the Irish and the government, British governments were fighting about the asylum and the, you know, the idea that people were travelling from the UK to Northern Ireland and coming and then seeking asylum in Ireland. And I don't know if you remember Rishi Sunak going, well, we're not taking these people back. And so it is, I guess, a marked change in the relationship. But a lot of photos and smiles, but I don't know if we'll see anything of real substance.
Right. And I think, I think a senior Irish official talking to our colleague, Tommy Mescal, said the most significant thing about it was that it happened. So actually the Guinness diplomacy quote has just been fed into me here in studio, that Keir Starmer told a room full of people last night at a cultural reception in Liverpool that the relationship between UK and Ireland has never reached its full potential, but he's delighted now with this summit that, quote, we're going to change all of that. It has great ambitions. And he joked that he was looking forward to a bit of Guinness diplomacy. Right. We'll let that one hang. Anyway, from Guinness diplomacy to Europe's stout defence of its own interests, European leaders discussing defence and a debt instrument to aid European defence at a summit in the European Council today. Louise, what happened?
Probably a more substantial meeting in Brussels today than was being held in Liverpool over the last 48 hours, I think it's fair to say. But this is being called an extraordinary meeting, an emergency meeting, the 5 minutes to midnight meeting. And I guess in part where this really has come from is the US's withdrawal of support for Ukraine, and following those extraordinary scenes that we saw in the White House between President Trump and President Zelensky last Friday. But Ursula von der Leyen, the President of the European Commission, has been talking about her Rearm Europe plan. And what that involves in part is €800 billion for defence investment. And, you know, governments can get a loan, they can, you know, invest in the defence how they see it. They can also use it to kind of invest in Ukraine, buy weapons from them, put it back into, you know, the defence of Ukraine. And I think if anything has been seen over the last few days, is that we probably need that. But there was an agreement this evening, and pretty strong language, I think it has to be said, in the
everybody agreed on the debt bit, and then there was a subsequent statement as well where there was 27 members agreed on the debt bit, but on the other bit, 26 members agreed.
Yeah, and that other bit was on Ukraine, and I suppose in that it condemned Russia's aggression towards Ukraine and its sustained aggression and the war, ongoing war. And as people might expect, Hungary and Viktor Orban, you know, stood back from that. They didn't sign that, they didn't back that, and they would be seen as, you know, probably more of an ally to Russia than others in the European Union. So they didn't sign that one. They did sign the defence one, which is interesting in and of itself that they signed one and not the other, because the defence resolution did actually mention Russia's aggression in Ukraine, and it kind of said that in that context there's even more of a reason for European countries to
be defending
itself.
I think the second one mentioned military aid to Ukraine, and
that seemed to be the issue.
That's the one they objected to. Maybe stepping outside the Stability and Growth Pact and not counting defence borrowing for the purposes of calculating debt might have been something that attracted them. Maybe they think that establishes a precedent further down the line. Okay, this issue of spending, Éanna Riordan, we'll start with you. Do you expect Ireland to avail of it, first of all, and do you believe it has any impact on Ireland's security, identity or its neutrality?
Well, it can't. All right, so I think we'll put that to bed before we start. But I just want to give people maybe, and yourself, obviously, Colm, the atmosphere that myself, obviously, Kathleen and Billy will have been exposed to over the last number of days. I've had endless meetings within my own group, the Social Democrats group of the European Parliament, we're the second biggest group. And obviously, we have colleagues from across the European continent, every member state, bar two. And there's a huge amount of nervousness, understandably, and every second speaker talks about this historic moment, this time of history. And for 80 years, we've had this understanding that we had a relationship with the US and the US have gone rogue. And the actions of Trump in the last 6 weeks have done more damage than he did in the 4 years of his presidency when it comes to the international order. He's withdrawn support for Ukraine. He's withdrawn intelligence sharing with Ukraine, which has, it would appear, facilitated a number of bombings of Ukrainian cities only yesterday. And all of these old sort of assumptions that we had in the European Union of having security from the States on one side, cheap energy from Russia on the other side, and a Chinese economy that was willing to purchase a lot of the stuff that the EU states produce, all those things are now up in the air.
Right. So the decision about borrowing for defence.
Yeah. So Europe has to step up, but it's the form, what the form of that is, and the financing of it, and what the command structure will be, and all that. It still has to be teased out. This 800 billion figure.
Just on that, you're talking about the finance there, but what do you mean by command structure?
Well, I mean, look, there is certainly a sense from within my own group and other groups that we cannot depend at all on the States anymore. We have an entity in Putin who is unpredictable and could literally do anything. Mm. If the tanks start rolling into a member state of the European
Most
Union.
Most of your colleagues would be from NATO member states.
Yeah, they would be, yeah. So, I mean, look, just for clarity, the Maltese are neutral just as ourselves. The Austrians are neutral just as ourselves. So they would have a different view on this. But just to say, look, I think this may actually bind European member states together. I think it actually might, just going back to the previous discussion, improve relations with the UK because it's a similar value system. But certainly hard discussions are going to be had. But I'll say this much. We don't want financing that is due to be to improve citizens' lives in terms of housing or other things to be sucked into a military fund.
Okay. Kathleen Funchen, should Ireland avail of a facility for borrowing to increase defence spending? I think your party supports getting to level of ambition 3 for the defence forces, jets, ships, etc. Should this be a way to achieve that?
Well, first of all, I think in relation to our own defence forces and the state of our naval fleet and everything like that, yes, we support within Ireland, the terms and conditions, for example, of the armed forces, we all know has been extremely poor. So that is something that we need to seriously up our game in relation to Ireland. But certainly do not support the idea of 800 billion being spent in defence and the idea of bending and allowing countries to change fiscal rules for them to spend extra in relation to military when there is literally something like 94.5 million citizens in Europe at risk of poverty, living at risk of poverty. And just a few weeks ago, a number of us Irish MEPs would have met with a disability organisation, a European disability organisation, and they're calling for the relaxation of fiscal rules for some of the services that they badly need. And that's never up for negotiation. That seems to be an absolute no every single time it's raised. And yet now all of a sudden, all this money can be potentially spent on defence. I think we need to be really, really strong in terms of our own neutrality here in relation to the triple lock. But I also think, yes, we know we're in uncertain times, we're in very worrying times, but now more than ever, we need calm heads, we need to look to our diplomacy, we need to be sitting around the negotiation table with people. But I don't think coming out, say, in 800 billion for defence when you have people, you know, crying out for all sorts of services right throughout, not just in Ireland, but right throughout. And I don't think there is an appetite, certainly amongst the Irish public. And I would say across most of the European member states, there isn't an appetite for that level of spending.
I'll come back to you on some of the spending issues on this. But Billy Kelleher, does this make any difference to Ireland? You know, we have an economy that's in surplus. Does increasing the facility to raise debt and spend it on defence make any difference?
Not necessarily for Ireland, because we wouldn't be in breach of the Stability and Growth Pact, so we wouldn't actually have to apply for an exemption in the context of military spending. So if we are beefing up our own defence forces, which we've committed to in the terms of we've had the dialogue, the strategic dialogue, we are now committed to going to level 2, possibly even ambition 3. So, but like we have to live in the real world here. $650 billion is not being paid by the European Union. That is, it will allow member states to borrow and to breach the rules of the fiscal compact by $650 billion, and then there's $150 billion that will be provided as guarantees in the form of loans. So, but I think it's a bit rich of us to be telling people in the Baltics or Poland or elsewhere that they can't make a decision to defend themselves. And that really is something that I think we have to think long and hard. If we don't want to facilitate their defending themselves, and we actually objecting to the $800 billion being made available either by loans or borrowing requirements, really indicates that we are saying to the people across the Baltics and Poland and Romania and elsewhere, which will be availing of this particular fund, that they're not entitled to spend their own money defending themselves. That would be an extraordinary statement for any political party to make, even for Sinn Féin.
Okay, Louise Byrne, the issue of the choices that will have to be made, whatever Ireland commits to in its defence spending to get to level of ambition 3, there will be a debate. For every extra euro that's spent on defence, people will point to other deserving areas of spending, whether that's at home or in overseas aid or anything else, and say, why not here?
I mean, of course there will. And, you know, this was actually put to Micheál Martin. He was in Brussels earlier, as we were saying. And, you know, it was said to him, you know, there's issues like housing. There's all these kind of issues that need to be dealt with. And we're putting money into this. And what he seemed to be implying is that we can do everything. And he, like Billy actually said there, he said initially we are looking at level of ambition too. And, you know, we need to protect ourselves. We need to make sure we can protect ourselves, because I mean, it's the world is changing, and I think the last couple of years have shown that. But he was saying that you get to the level of ambition 2 and then you see how much more you can go, and you eventually can you get to that level of ambition 3 from 2. So he seems to think we have enough money to do everything, and he seems to think that through this fund that is being set up, through Ursula von der Leyen's plans to rearm Europe and enter this era of rearmament, as she said during the week, he seems to think we'll be able to do everything. But whether we will or not, if there's another economic downturn, if we're hit by things like tariffs, we don't know what's coming around the corner. So right now perhaps we can afford it, but who knows into the future what's going to happen.
Okay, Eoghan Reardon, hard choices.
Yeah, but I mean, I think we have to realise the nature of the threat. And, you know, this is not ordinary times. This is not ordinary politics. And the international order has been completely upended. We have the bizarre situation of the Prime Minister of Canada, who is a pretty sober, middle-of-the-road kind of guy, saying that it's clear that from his vantage point that Trump is trying to collapse the Canadian
economy. We are going to get to tariffs later, but, you know...
The point I asked you was about
choices. So
yeah.
If Ireland is going to get to level of ambition 3 in the changed climate that Ireland, that the world lives in, and
we absolutely
to defend
have to invest. Okay. We have to, everything in politics comes down to a choice.
So is it extra, or will there have to be choices to be made in the economy as to what Ireland is spending on? I mean,
we are a particularly rich country. We have resources available to us. We have budgets, surpluses, and all the rest. I think it's complete. It's also we haven't spent properly in this area for quite a number of generations. But I also would make the point is that we cannot exaggerate the level of threat that is, which is in our orbit.
No, in fairness, you have made that point. But Kathleen Funchen, getting to level of ambition 3, your party supports that. So that will mean more spending and making those kinds of choices that you were talking about.
Yeah, but there is, I mean, we all know the condition of our defence forces at present, and that there's a serious issue with recruitment, with retention. That's given the very low wages, other poor terms and conditions, and, you know, talk about the actual condition of, you know, for example, whether it's vessels or, you know, various various pieces of equipment. But I just, what really absolutely boils my blood is straight away they can say, oh, we can change the fiscal rules when it comes to military spending. Why not on the same day say we'll change the fiscal rules for disability spending and for spending in the housing sector? You know, if they are thinking they can do it all, why not announce it all on the same day?
Billy Kelleher?
It's just, it's totally, it's hypocritical.
Well, look, on that point.
Yeah, look, I was involved in the last negotiations around those fiscal rules. I was the rapporteur for Renew on this particular issue. I mean, you have to have fiscal rules. If you don't have fiscal rules, the euro that we have in our pocket will be actually worthless. So, I mean, fiscal rules are important. But what we have never gauged so far was the impact of an imminent threat to Europe. And this is not ordinary times, as Ian said. I mean, the people in the Baltics and Poland and elsewhere are convinced that Russia will more than likely attack some European country in the next number of years.
I just need to clarify point with you. Okay, so
but it's a bit late to be arming. Ireland, when they're in Vilnius.
Okay, Ireland is neutral. Ireland will not play a role in the current security architecture. Ireland will not play a role in the frontline defence of Europe. Are you saying you think it should?
No, I'm saying very clearly that from our perspective, we're a neutral country. We can make contributions to EU budgets because there will be pressure on EU budgets due to the fact that other countries are rearming. Micheál Martin said today at the Council presidency in Brussels that in the event of there being a peace agreement, that we could or may commit troops to peacekeeping forces in Ukraine to defend the peace, but not as an aggressive force. And I think that's a very fundamental difference, you know, to maintain peace in the context of a peace agreement between Russia and Ukraine, okay, supported by Europe. That is something that we could do and probably would want to do.
Okay. Louise Byrne, are you entirely clear on, I'm asking you this just as somebody watching the debate, are you entirely clear as to what the end state request from Europe to Ireland is? I mean, we seem to get more and more talk about what is expected of Ireland, what Ireland's obligations are as part of Europe. But what is Ireland supposed to do in response to that apart from raw spending?
And I think this is the big question. And I would wonder, you know, does the Irish government even know that? And I mean, I think that point that Billy made about what the Taoiseach was saying earlier of we will only do peacekeeping missions and things like that, I think that is important. And I think, you know, that is Ireland saying that we are not going to suddenly turn and start fighting in wars. We will keep in that peacekeeping capacity. But I mean, don't forget the other important thing here that always comes up is the undersea cables off our coast and how can Ireland protect them and can they protect them at all? And I think those are the kind of discussions that we need or that the Irish government needs to be having with Europe, because, you know, if we're not going to be going to fight wars, I don't think anyone wants our citizens going to fight in wars and being an aggressive force, as Billy said. Well, then what can we do? And is it about protection? And are we protecting ourselves? And I mean, very clearly we can't. And I think that's been well said. So I think it's very unclear.
Okay. Eoin O'Riordan, this matter of what is expected of Ireland, you know, and I want to bring the triple lock in as something on this. Is removing the triple lock to deploy Irish troops abroad a kind of a workaround to the constitutional prohibition on Ireland joining a European defence union? I mean, we've already seen constitutional workarounds in the area of appointing super junior ministers. Is getting rid of the triple lock and raising the number of Irish troops that can be deployed abroad another workaround?
Well, look, I've observed the triple lock debate, all right, and we as a party are not in favour of the triple lock being abandoned, because I think, and we think, that deployment of Irish troops has to come under a UN mandate. And I understand the arguments that come about the veto on the Security Council. I get all that, and they're fair points. But there's other, you know, mechanisms within the UN that you can get a mandate from the General Assembly as well. And it has served us well. But that debate is going to take place in the Dáil in the coming weeks, and the government is most likely going to get its way. The further question here is about, you know...
And that's the precise point I want. So if your party has concerns about the removal of the triple lock, Where does that concern arise from? Where do you think the pressure will come for Ireland to do other things?
I think up until this point, it has rarely come up I think it's only come up once, I think, in the last whatever number of 40 years or so, where there's been an individual instance where the triple lock was seen as a major barrier for us to do what we really wanted to do in this sphere. But we're obviously going into a much more dangerous time. But we're going to focus a lot on deployment. But I think what the European Union would look to Ireland to do is possibly in other areas, not just, you know, data sharing, and the UK is going to be a major part of that, but also potentially the welcoming of refugees from potential conflict zones, which we have obviously done in the past. And we may be required to take a disproportionate number. And that's, I think, people are going to get their heads around that, because if Lithuania is invaded, or Moldova is invaded, or Estonia is invaded, or God help us, Poland, well, then that's going to be really part of the response that Ireland's going to expect it to
okay.
do.
Okay, Billy Kelleher, the removal of the triple lock. It's not entirely clear what Ireland wants to do or what it is being blocked from doing by the triple lock. And could people be forgiven for thinking that getting rid of it is a constitutional workaround for deploying people in some kind of a European context as yet undefined?
Yeah, well, I don't think there's a constitutional barrier at the moment to deploying people. The only barrier to deploying people is the fact that
joining a European defence union, there is a barrier to that.
Oh, yes, there is a barrier to that, yes. But I do not believe that Ireland will be joining a military alliance anytime soon or way into the future. The fact of the matter is, we spoke about removal of the triple lock long before the major concerns about the escalation of Russian aggression towards Europe, etc., and the United States withdrawing its long-term support.
To be fair, your part. The party did say that the triple lock was an integral part of Irish policy, and even before Ireland's entry into Partnership for Peace. Let me finish. Before your entry into Partnership for Peace, your then Foreign Affairs spokesperson, Ray Burke, called for a referendum on it.
Yes, but I can go back further, and Sean Lamass, who was a person that I would have a lot of time for as well, also said that if something's worth building, it's worth defending. We weren't always neutral. Neutrality has something that has evolved over a period of time. The geopolitical system has changed fundamentally. The potential threats to our country have changed fundamentally. Undersea cables, for example, all of these things are issues that have to be protected.
Right. So do you support removing the triple lock for Sean Lamass's reasons of Europe needs to be defended?
Or ourselves. Like, as it stands, we have to get permission from either Russia, the States, UK, France and China to do anything in terms of deploying the troops abroad. We have to get permission from another country.
Right. It would make it a lot easier for people to understand why, and I got Kathleen Funchin in this as well,
simple examples. Like in the context, we'll say, of there being a settlement in the Middle East, for example, you could still have a veto from one of the members in the UN Security Council. We could not provide a peacekeeping force there. We simply could not. And the UN Security Council and the UN has had not peacekeeping missions for the last number of years, simply because we can get agreement with the UN Security Council. In the event of there being a major escalation in Europe, we couldn't even provide military field hospitals in the context of providing care to injured people. Okay. We must move beyond that.
Only if the army is providing the field hospitals. But anyway, Kathleen Funchin, on that, there is the major issue, I suppose, that's been raised around the triple lock is it's a sovereignty argument. You know, when it came to the migration debate, Sinn Féin didn't want to cede sovereignty to Europe on the issue of migration, but seems happy enough to cede sovereignty to UN on the issue of deployment of troops.
Well, I think we do not support in any way, shape or form getting rid of the triple lock, and I would be really, really concerned about that. And I think that if there is to be any discussions, and it seems that the government are hell-bent on pushing through their own, what they want to see happen in this area, I think they should have a referendum and ask the people if they're so confident of what they think the position will be. I think people are far more clued into this debate than they realise. I think it's really important that if there is to be peacekeeping missions, that they are UN mandated. And I think that has been kind of the backbone of the policy, and I would be very concerned about that. And I think that I really have a take issue with the way the government are handling this particular situation as well. And I think, you know, we'll put it to the people and see what the people think. And I would be shocked if people don't support the keeping of the triple lock. People are really, really proud of our stance over the years. And it is a little bit rich for government representatives to be all of a sudden, you know, talking around peacekeeping missions when they've allowed our own defence forces to be absolutely, you know.
Well, no, Kathleen, in fairness, I mean, Fianna Fáil in terms of peacekeeping has...
Peacekeeping missions in the past had to be abandoned because of the condition of our defence They should spend more time consulting with those people who work in the defence forces and asking them around how they can improve their situation. You know, I think they're just totally out of touch with the public in this.
We'll let Billy Keller respond on that.
All I can say is that Fianna Fáil has a much greater tradition of peacekeeping and supporting our defence forces than Sinn Féin has in every aspect. And it is a bit rich to be getting lectured about... We have been sending troops abroad under UN mandates for many, many years. We lost troops in Congo, we lost troops in Lebanon, we've lost troops around the world, very proudly maintaining peace. The bottom line here is in the last number of years, peacekeeping missions have stopped effectively because they're moribund in the UN Security Council with the permanent reps. And Ireland is effectively handing its sovereignty in terms of what it can do with its own military personnel over to those five permanent members.
Just to say, 10 years ago, Micheál Martin, in opposition, made the exact same arguments that myself and Kathleen are making this evening.
Okay.
He was quite happy to play politics with it
I'm just making a very simple fact.
We went back to Sean Lamass and Ray Burke there. There's an awful lot more recent Fianna Fáil position on the triple lock, which is much more consistent with what myself and Kathleen are saying.
Okay. We are going to look at the way the debate is being held, because Louise, a lot of the debate around Ireland's defence architecture and everything else is often preceded by the phrase weak underbelly. As if, you know, again, there's an expectation on Ireland to up its game from elsewhere. So there's a kind of a difference of opinion on that. I saw Tom Clonan, the security analyst and senator, saying that he never hears it in the forums he mixes in. And then another columnist, Owen Dray, who is affiliated to EPP, that would be Fine Gael's group in the European Parliament, EPP-affiliated think tank, saying people are always talking about Ireland being a kind of a freeloader. So this whole thing about the weak underbelly seems to be coming from the latter thing, that somehow Ireland is freeloading on others.
Yeah, it is one of those discussions, depending on who you speak to, they have differing opinions. I think Tom Clonan is very good in this area for what it's worth. He's an expert and, you know, he's been centrally involved on the front line and he does know what he's talking about. But, I mean, we do always seem to be asking people for a dig out, and I mean, we speak about a lot when we're speaking about the triple lock, a veto on potential peacekeeping missions, but also under the triple lock we can't send more than 12 defence forces members abroad at any one time, and that has prevented the defence forces from even going to help Irish citizens out of dangerous situations. We've had situations in Sudan where the French have had to come in and extract our citizens because Ireland was not able to go and do it themselves. We have had to call in people a lot, but...
Well, you make a good point there. So is there a landing zone in this triple lock debate, Eoghan Riordan, on just debating the cap or amending the cap? There's a compromise position between government and opposition where those kind of rescue missions could be engaged
in. I mean, I think there probably is. There probably is between the binary of keep it exactly as it is and those who are advocating for it to be abandoned. But, you know, that debate is worthy of us to have without accusations from one side saying, well, that, you know, we're stuck in the past, and other accusations from the other side. Yeah, I would imagine there is, and that'll be fleshed out in the Rockets debates in the next while. But we shouldn't, like, let's be clear here. You know, it's not just about deployment of forces. It also is about you can divorce that entire argument from what Kathleen's quite rightly talking about you know, the underinvestment in our defence forces, the poor paying conditions, the fact that you can't attract anybody to it. But also, there are, as I said before, you know, you're taking in 100,000 Ukrainians. That is a big part. Okay.
I know. I want to ask Kathleen Funchkin.
Because
there are other issues.
The Irish governments were quite happy to cut in recent months.
Okay, Kathleen Funchkin, is there maybe a landing zone, a compromise, maybe in the cap that's in the current triple lock, where it possibly could be retained, but way might be given by the opposition on the number of troops that could be deployed abroad?
Yeah, look, I do see the point that you're making and the point Louise is making there too, in fairness. I just think in relation to this topic as well, I do think people want to have their say on it and they want to be part of the debate. And I just don't believe that we should be changing it currently. And I think any changes, we really should be put into a referendum for people.
We have a few listeners who want to be part of the debate here. I'll get to their comments in a second. But Billy Callagher, do you think there's a landing zone there between, you know, on compromising on the cap for the triple lock? So, you know, maybe this doesn't need to be as fractious a debate.
Well, it shouldn't be fractious at all. I mean, we should be able to trust our government and our parliament or our OCTAS to make the decisions on behalf of our military personnel. I mean, at the present time, our skies are being patrolled or being policed or observed by the United Kingdom Air Force. We can patrol our seas. We have one major vessel that can go up to sea for a few days. So we have huge areas of unprotected. And I'm not saying that we should have squadrons of fighter jets flying around in the skies, but we should have the capacity to know what's happening in our skies, on our seas and under our seas. And at the moment, unfortunately, we don't. And the subsea cables is not just something that we should forget about. The fact of the matter, the Russians were here in January 2022 scoping out all the cables on the southwest of Ireland off the Porcupine Basin, and there was nothing, literally nothing we could do.
Okay, I don't think there's any, I don't think there's any disagreement around the table that Ireland needs to spend more on its own domestic defence. The question is just if a defence capability is increased, what's done with it other areas?
Yeah, but by us increasing our own military, we are complementing European defence in the sense that eyes and ears in terms of observing what is happening in our territorial waters assists in making sure that Europe is a safer place. So, I mean, by us increasing, we're playing our part as well in ensuring that citizens and the infrastructure that's owned by European citizens and by Irish citizens in Ireland is protected.
Before I go to the rest of the panel, but on that point, and going back to the question I asked earlier, so what is the expectation, what's the explicit request that's been made of Ireland from Europe to play a role, and a role that's compatible with our military neutrality?
Well, there's no direct request. Because we're not in NATO. So, I mean, from a NATO perspective, there's an obligation for them to spend a certain percentage of their GDP on military defence. From a European perspective, we're all expected to make contributions to the European budget based on our GDP. And Ireland is a net contributor, and we will continue to be that. But there's no direct obligation for us to increase spending in defence. We are obliged just to fund the budgets in accordance with our gross national product or our GDP.
Eoghan, is Europe changing as a result of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Could we see treaty change being requested?
Possibly. Look, we got elected, myself and Kathleen got elected in June. After that, there's the UK election, which felt that maybe we could have an improved relationship with the UK. And then November happened. And since January, it's been, I don't want to say chaos, but certainly it has been extreme sense of worry and anxiety amongst colleagues that I speak to, and the entirety of the sense of the mandate. All these things are coterminous. So like, you know, the British election, the American election, the European elections have all happened pretty much around the same time. So we're looking forward to 4 or 5 years of this. It's not as if we can just hope in 2 years' time that there's going to be a regime change. And there's no expectation that things are going to change in America anytime soon, or in Russia. So I would say that we haven't even gotten this week to a discussion around tariffs. We're not even at the space.
Well, we're going to get to that.
Colm, I'd love to finish the sentence, but without you interrupting me. There haven't even got the chance to discuss the US and tariffs.
With respect to the reason I did cut across you is because the question I asked you was, is Europe changing?
So
I'm going to segue into something else. So Kathleen Funchin,
my point is that
in fairness, you've had ample time to answer the concise question I asked. I'm going to move on to Kathleen Funchin. Kathleen Funchin, do you think that there's a debate starting on the future direction of Europe?
There's definitely changes within Europe, and even just, I suppose, individual member states and some of their own elections and that kind of maybe you know, in certain countries more removed to the right. There's obviously all the stuff that's happening in America. And yes, it's definitely uncertain times. But then I think more than ever, you know, particularly here in Ireland, we need to look to, you know, where we can have that relationship, for example, with Britain. With the change in government there, I think has been a positive for us, and we need to kind of build on that and look at kind of what allies we do have in Europe. And that my concern, I suppose, is that we are getting away from, you know, and I would have said this actually during the campaign in the election, we're getting away from, I suppose, some of the really positive things that we did see once upon a time coming from Europe around, you know, workers' rights and gender equality and stuff like that. And it is moving towards this kind of, you know, military defence. And yet you have all of these other groups, you know, talking to all MEPs from all countries around, you know, the conditions that so many people are living in. That are just, you know, we need to ensure that we're spending in areas, you know, such as disability and the kind of social sector, I suppose, you know.
Billy Keller, what do you see as the change in the debate as to the direction of Europe?
Well, I mean, the immediate issue is security and defence. And then beyond that, the difficulties that we'll have in Europe with the unanimity requirement and vetoes being used in a way that were never envisaged. And if we are to enlarge in the Western Balkans, if we're to enlarge as a union, which is possible over the next number of years, the question is, can the political architecture that's there at the moment work with an increased number of countries? And you'd have to hazard a guess that it's unlikely that it could. Like, we have a situation now where Viktor Orban in Hungary and Prime Minister Fico in Slovakia effectively can, you know, veto the European Union, not on the actual content of the debate itself, but extracting a pound of flesh from Europe elsewhere. And that simply was never the purpose of the veto in the first place. So I think that particular debate will not go away. And you do hear a lot of talk around the issue of more qualified majority voting, enhanced cooperation, and those that don't want to move with that, you know, will find the going tough, I think, in the years ahead. And okay, finally, a very pressing issue will be budgets and how Europe is funded. Regardless of the funding that was announced by Ursula von der Leyen yesterday, the simple fact of the matter is, we're asking Europe to do an awful lot with very little money, and that just is not possible longer term in cohesion funds, the common agricultural policy, etc. They'll all run into trouble if we as member states don't come up with some way of Europe funding itself, either through own resources or increased contributions from countries.
OK, you've highlighted a few contentious debates there, maybe ones we'll return to with yourselves and indeed your other MEP colleagues at some point in the future. Éan Reardon mentioned tariffs there. That's next on our agenda. We're going to take a quick break first. We're back in a minute.
The Late Debate with Cullum O'Mungon on RTE Radio 1.